images from 55 million light years away, next to the images from 2,000 years of the Armenian Church. Chavarum in the black hole. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting those dots as well as the ones between our psychological, physical, spiritual, and emotional selves. This is episode 566 of The Next Step. We're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Is it possible that Hollywood got this one right? Maybe. Or is it maybe just possible that dreaming is okay? That dreaming is good? That our imagination is really something God-given. Yeah. Well, did you see those pictures? They came out yesterday from 55 million light years away. Unbelievable. So unbelievable that they're preempting everything else I had prepared for today. It is unbelievable because, first of all, it confirmed a lot of the drawings, the imagination that people have had about black holes. Yes, you know that Albert Einstein in his theories of relativity, this is circa 1905, he had put down some of the basic equations for this. And it was then later, I don't know, several decades later, that somebody kind of figured out that, hey, if these numbers are right, there has to be areas where the mass is so dense that it just drags everything in. It drags everything in, including light. Just sucks it in. And we're talking about the density, you know, like if you were to take everything that's on Earth, right? Everything on Earth, and smooshed it. Yeah, I can't think of a better word than smooshed it. You smooshed it all together, and you brought it down to the size, not even of a marble. I mean, something even smaller than that. Imagine the density. Imagine all of that. Everything. Everything that we have on the Earth. With all the water, with all the mountains, with all the people, all the building, all the concrete, all the roads, everything. And you smooshed it. And you brought it down to this tiny, tiny, tiny little piece. That's what a black hole, that's what it is, the concentration. A star falling into itself. In other words, the gravity is so intense that everything just falls into it. And for many years, people have speculated, can it exist? Is there such a thing? And in fact, we've seen it in movies. Yes, we've had people think about it, imagine it. They've drawn it. They've actually put it there on film. And we've said, oh, this is a black hole. This is what it must look like. And then, sure enough, yesterday, the images came through. And guess what? We were looking at light being sucked into a hole. And the image, that light that we were looking at, I mean, it's kind of odd because you're talking about nothingness, right? And so what was the image that we were seeing? An image of nothing? No, we were actually looking at the outside. It was this circular little glow of superheated matter, okay, being sucked into the black hole. And we're looking at it. Hey. Yeah, it's happening. And you know what was fascinating about this whole thing is like they brought together this information from 8 different stations throughout the world. So 8 different observatories looking up at the same direction at a galaxy called M87, 55 million light years. That means the light that left there, left 55 million years ago. That means if you were sitting there at that point in time and you were looking at us, you would see like dinosaurs on our planet, right? That's when it was, 55 million light years ago. In other words, the light took that long to travel here, and it has arrived. And now these 8 telescopes throughout the world, with their people behind them, got together, and they basically created an observatory the size of our Earth. Yeah. See, this is the remarkable thing about it. People working together for some common purpose. They basically came together and they designed a telescope the size of our Earth to study this black hole. And the information came to us. And we're looking at it. And guess what? It's looking very similar to what people had thought of, dreamt of. And for me, it was just, you know, I got goosebumps thinking that people, their imagination, this God-given gift that we have of the mind, the brain, of our reasoning powers, of putting everything together. And we came up with this image before we saw the picture. And now the picture has come through. The Hollywood vision of fantasy was very close to reality. 8 telescopes coordinated around the world. You know how exciting that is? Well, you're saying, okay, Father Voskin, wait, we tuned into you because you're a religious show. Now, what are you talking about, science? No. Relax, okay? Take a chill pill. Relax. We're going to get there because you know what is coming up this next week, right? You know what's coming up. It's Holy Week, right? Okay. Can we make this connection? Well, you know Father Voskin can, okay? We're going to connect the dots. So let me just go back, because I was fascinated. You know, I've been fascinated about this since early childhood, waking up in early, early wee hours of the morning and turning on our black and white television set to watch the astronauts take off for orbits around the Earth. This is before we even went to the moon. We had the Mercury spacecrafts. We had the Apollo spacecrafts. It was Apollo 11 that went to the moon. And I've shared with you so much about that experience, about what we did, what we saw at the time. It was very, very, very exciting stuff. And this year in July 20th, exactly, it's going to be 50 years exactly to the date that man put his footprint on the moon. I was very fascinated throughout, you know, even through the Challenger and the Endeavor, the Discovery, the space station. It's always been a fascination of mine because when looking up, we see the heavens. You see this beauty out there and you let your imagination go. That's what I think is the thing that attracts so many of us. You have an opportunity to let your imagination go. You look at the most successful imagination, so to speak, in our recent history. That would be Walt Disney, right? He basically took a small little mouse, gave it a little personality, and made it into this multi-billion dollar empire, right? Because he let his imagination go. And so, too, with the entire space program, is people letting their imagination go. And you know what? To me, it's always been the fascination of fantasy, of the ability for us to think beyond ourselves, beyond what we see in the present, and imagine. I mean, you think about space flight. You think about, well, who was it? Jules Verne's 1800s, right? He wrote about time travel. People said, oh, no, can't be. They talked about space travel. Oh, no, can't be. They talked about simple things like just flight, right? Putting on wings and flying. Yeah, no, can't be. I mean, we are now just moving people around the Earth, around the globe. We are now exploring space. And it all begins with these simple dreams. Now, imagine if we can dream bigger dreams. We can make them happen. Imagine if you could dream of peace, harmony, about love. Does it sound too simplistic? Well, it is. That's one of the beauties of what we talk about here on Armadoxy. And the next step, that is the next step. In other words, finding this common language, this ability to dream. I've been fascinated by entire space explore. In fact, you know, I got into computers very early. I've shared with you, you know, we actually ran the first Armenian bulletin board system back in the 1980s. Electronic bulletin board system. It was called sane.org. And, you know, I accredit being at the right place at the right time. We were in Silicon Valley with a ministry over there at the St. Andrew Church. And so we had this opportunity to really explore and exploit. And I thank God for those years. We were able to look beyond ourselves. And, you know, I remember our first computers that we had. And the first time we hooked up to the internet, I got very, very involved in a program called SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And it was a simple kind of program. I think it's still around. I shouldn't talk in the past tense. I haven't connected with them in a few years now. But basically, it was a simple idea. You have a computer, and you use it for several hours during the day, but there is some off time for that computer. So how about if you set it so that it uses the computing power of that computer during your off time? Namely, we're talking about what we used to call screensavers. Now, today, screensavers don't make too much sense, but in the old days, screensavers really actually saved your screen. We used to have these monitors that were tube-based. And so if you had an image on the screen, you'd have a burn. It would burn into your screen. Probably. My guess is that very few people can relate to this. But if you've seen, they look like basically old-time television sets. They were big tubes. And so imagine you have written a letter and you have left it on your screen for a day, 2 days, or you've just left it for several hours. What it would do is it would burn the screen. You know, the white images would burn the phosphorus on the screen. And so to prevent this, they came out with programs called screensavers. They still refer to them as screensavers, but now they're ornate. But in the old days, they used to have a practical purpose to them. And there was one great one. It was little toasters. I forgot who it was. It was all the rave to have those toasters on your, especially on Macintosh screens. Yeah, because the Macintoshes came all as a combined package. So anyway, screensavers would make your, like today, they would make your screen change images. And in so doing, you wouldn't have that screen burn. So what they came up with, and I can't remember if it was NASA or some other agency, they came up with the SETI program, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and they offshooted by letting people, normal people, regular people, I shouldn't say normal, yeah, regular people, civilians, the secular, so to speak, the laity, there you go. There's a nice church term. Let the laity, in other words, the non-scientists, the non-astronomers, participate in the search for extraterrestrials by hooking up your computer to the SETI. And you know what? I'm so fascinated just talking about it. I'm going to make a link, and Ken's given me the wink over there. He'll have a link. If there is such a link, we'll put it on today's show notes if it hasn't been defunct, okay? So what you would do is that when you left your computer, it would go into the sleep mode, and it would activate this this screensaver. The screensaver was actually that link with the SETI station. And what they would do specifically is they download information that came in from outer space. So the telescopes have been set. And there's tons, every single moment, there is tons of information that those telescopes are receiving from deep space. And in the old days, you know, they didn't have computers that could scrunch. What's the word we used earlier? Smoosh. No, this is scrunch, okay? they didn't have the muscle power to crunch all those numbers that were coming from outer space. So they would give out those numbers. They would give out that data to all of these computers that were connected. So you would use your computer, it would process the information, then send it back to the SETI lab, and they would send you a new group of information, a new packet of data. And that's what SETI was all about, using all the computers of anybody who wanted to volunteer. They would plug it in, and you would be participating in this search for extraterrestrial life. So I was very fascinated by the SETI program and was involved and always had a computer that was connected to them and sharing my computing power with this group up until, I'd say, a few years ago, maybe about 5-6 years ago, something. And like I said, we'll look into it and make sure if it's around, I'll put a link on. And I'd love to get back into that. That was fascinating. So what happened yesterday? What happened is that all of these computers and all of these telescopes and all of these people came together and they looked up and they saw the black holes and they saw the images that were being sent back. And they, first time, were able to connect a picture with the theories that they had. Now, here's what's interesting. Everything breaks down. All known laws of physics falls apart, breaks down inside of the black hole. I want to say that again, okay? As much as we can imagine what we're looking at, what we're seeing, and what we can speculate, and what we've imagined and drawn and illustrated, is not the black hole itself. It's about the light around the black hole. Even when you see these pictures, we'll have them on our show notes, even when you see the pictures of the black hole, what you're seeing is not the hole, but you're seeing the light that defines that hole. In other words, the light that is being sucked in to this hole, and nothing comes out of that black hole, which makes you imagine and think, is it possible that our known universe, where we exist right now, is perhaps a giant black hole? Are we inside of a black hole? And maybe that's what happens inside. Because what they say is that the known laws of physics falls apart. So what's in, nobody really knows, okay? They can't even speculate because, the laws aren't there. And it's interesting because what are some of the laws that we challenge in religion? In faith, the virgin birth, impossible, right? Who says? Who says she got pregnant without a man? Who says it's impossible? He resurrected from the grave. It's impossible after death to come back to. Who says? Are there places and places in time, in space, where the laws that you and I know don't exist? Well, think about it in this way. What do we commemorate next week? It is the holiest of all seasons. It is called Holy Week. And during Holy Week, every human emotion is explored as our Lord Jesus Christ enters into Jerusalem and finds his way to Calvary, to the cross. And from the cross where he is crucified, there is a resurrection. And along that road, the expressions, the feelings, and everything that goes in humanity with every one of us can relate to those incidents that go there. But we can't relate to what happens at the end because it is beyond our reality. And so we say resurrection. We put a question mark on it. Why? I was watching a documentary the other day. It was very fascinating until they got into that question mark. It's about Jesus. And it's always interesting. They talk about Jesus of Nazareth. No, Jesus is the Christ who resurrected. That's a statement of faith. And that's who has defined Jesus of Nazareth, the Jesus, the Christ. You wouldn't be talking about Jesus of Nazareth had it not been for Jesus, the Christ. And so we look at that story, and what do we remember? The night. This is true armadoxy. I'm coming to you. You can't put this together any better way. What happens the night of the betrayal, the night of the passion. In the Armenian Orthodox tradition, we refer to that night as Khavarman Gisher, the night of darkness, the night where everything was sucked in, where not even light could escape, where everything was sucked into the bowels of the earth, the deepest, darkest trenches. That's the night. Khavarman Gisher. We commemorate that night. Think about it in terms of what we just saw. The black hole, where nothing escapes. But something does escape that, doesn't it? And isn't that the Easter message? Isn't that what the world is looking for and is really trying to find in the midst of all this? Our explorations of the unknown are nothing different than what we've done for centuries. For millennia, we've explored the unknown. We call it religion. Today, we call it space exploration. But there is so much out there, and it's humbling. When you look at it, it's humbling, right? To imagine that there's a place where not even light escapes. Call it a black hole. We call it Khavarman Gisher. It's part of the same equation, right? And when we start looking at it in these terms, we realize that we're all the people. Can we imagine those systems where there is peace, where there is harmony, where there is love? Of course we can. And it's up to us. But it needs to start. And this is the challenge of the Christian. Now today on our show notes, we'll have all kinds of links, one of which will be, or I think a couple of them will be about this black hole. I challenge you to look at them, but in particular, I want you to look at this one PBS link. In it, they interview a guy named Brian Greene, who is the science editor, or he's discussing this. I think he's from Columbia University. They ask him, specifically, when people hear, read about something that can suck everything around it into it because of the powerful forces of gravity, do people on Earth have anything to be afraid of when it comes to a black hole? That is a common question, right? Okay, you hear this and you go, oh, wow. Now, first of all, 55 million light years away is this one. And I think our closest one is 26,000 light years away. Still, it's a little bit closer. Relatively a lot closer, right, in astronomical terms. But, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. But here's a nice question. Do we have anything to lose sleep? And I want you to just listen to this answer. And we'll take a break on this answer so you can think about it a bit. Brian Greene, he says, oh, well, it's a natural thought. No, we have nothing really to be afraid of. These are just wonderful laboratories in which we can push our understanding. In fact, I would turn it around. We live in this fractured world. And how wondrous is it that 100 scientists on 4 continents using 8 radio telescopes, that their work now allows every citizen on planet Earth to look up and recognize that there are these deep, fundamental truths that transcend everything that divides us. To me, that is the real message of this breakthrough. Hear her. Can't say it any better. Let's take a break right now on that, and we'll go to some Gomidas. We're going to come back with some thoughts on the Gomidas conference we just had. This is taken from Gomidas 10 Revelations. It is called Anushkarun, Sweet Spring. Enjoy. Thank you.
Անուշկարում ծաղիկ բողբոջ, զվարդարում կայտար խողջ, կանաչ տալար ծիծաղ ծողիկ, վհտաղ տալար, դու ուրդողիկ.
Rendition of Anush Karun, Sweet Spring, done by Vahan Arzruni. This is off of his Gomidas 10 Revelations album. Yeah, I'll put a link on today's show notes for sure. It was interesting because we had the Gomidas conference, the Reclaim Gomidas. I'll share some thoughts about that in a few minutes. But we had the conference, and one of the highlights of it was the concert that... that we had in the evening after the conference. And their artist, Vache Mankurian, celebrated Gomidas by playing some, just, I don't know how to describe them, earth-moving renditions of Gomidas. And after the concert, I had a chance to talk with him, and I asked, you know, there was two things. At the concert, we heard choral selections, which we know, Gomidas, choral selections particularly, and it was very, very nice of them to also remember me that night. They actually sang a song to me, which was fun. But we know about the choral renditions of Gomidas. But, for instance, the string quartet and Vache Mankurian's arrangements of Gomidas, I asked him, I said, had Gomidas ever heard in his lifetime, the string quartets. And he told me, no, 1940s, that's when the arrangements were made, when they took Gomi Das's basic patterns, his melody lines, and they arranged it for string quartet. Same thing with his creations, as well as the one you just heard right now. So this comes from Vahan Arzruni. This is off of the 10 Revelations album. There'll be a link on today's show notes so you could check out the entire album. I hope you enjoyed it.
Svet to hopper kak after of gonach sore gonach sore sore ter bare ber of soliker sirunik 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 nachum kakavi sirunik 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 nachum kakavi Kobun hus atta regner och Shoshan nargis non un faro Koter lets vat ushavo Kernes gelles jerku
That is what you call a catchy tune, don't you? Yeah, Gakavik. Gormichitarian playing it. One of my favorites. I bet you it's your favorite, too. It's one of those songs that everybody, every Armenian kind of like attaches to and relates to. Siruni Gakavi. I remember going to a Gormichitarian concert. I would say it has to be at least 6-7 years ago out at the Pavilion, a Los Angeles little outdoor venue, very much like the Hollywood Bowl. It had a shell, a half shell there, and we were all in the audience sitting on the green. And he had us, he tuned down the amplification units and went acoustic for a few moments. And he had everybody singing, humming, Gakavik, Sirunik, Gakavik, Arev Patsvets Tuchamberit. It's just beautiful. It was just beautiful. And whenever I hear that song, it takes me there. But I'm bringing this all up because we just did the Reclaim Gomi Das conference. And now, if you remember back in 2017, we started with this idea of reclaiming what is ours, namely our faith life, showing the world that, hey, through the church, through the Armenian Orthodox Church, there is faith. There is an opportunity for people to reclaim their faith. And I brought this very simple story up about Jesus at age 12 being left in at the temple in Jerusalem. And I believe it's St. Luke who recounts this story of the parents, Joseph and Mary, in the caravan that is going back to Bethlehem, realizing that Jesus is not with them. And they turn back. They go back to Jerusalem, not for something that they have lost, but something that they have forgotten. And I think this is the theme that came out through Reclaim in the past few years. We did Reclaim 2017, 2018, and of course this year we're at 2019, the third annual. And that's thanks to Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, who pushed the idea of having an annual reclaim event, reclaiming what is ours, not something we have lost, but something which we had perhaps forgotten. And in this case, this year, we focused in on Gomi Das as a Vartabed. There's a clever little video that came out in prep for this conference. It is Alex Trebek of Jeopardy fame asking the question, or reading the answer, as it is in Jeopardy. He reads it something about a musician who changed Armenian music. And the contestant responds that, who is Gomi Das? And Alex Trebek has to throw him out. I'm sorry, it's wrong. The title is, Who is Gomi Das Vartabed? And that's the reclaim of this year. Let's reclaim Gomi Das, not as a musician, not as some Armenian leader, but as a Vartabed, a true monk of the Armenian Church, a true priest of the Armenian Church. Let's just be very plain about it. Like if you saw him, he was Father Gomi Das. And we reclaimed him. It was fascinating. It was beautiful. It was a one-day conference culminating in a concert in the evening. And I got to tell you, I just enjoyed it so much. We had five speakers. And I've got to tell you, compared to the last years, the last 2017 and 2018, it was completely different in that this was on a focus on a specific person as opposed to issues of faith that we all share. This was an opportunity to look at an individual and find our faith or bounce off our faith in reaction to this individual. Just fascinating. It was a different beast and very enjoyable. Couple things that I want to share with you today. One of them was Father Zakaria, who is the priest from Arizona. He came out and he gave this fascinating, fascinating, detailed account of so many of the inside stories to Gomidas Vartabed. Gomidas Vartabed gave his heart to Christ, he said. And he picked up his cross and followed him, which I had never thought about it, considering Gomidas, you know, in 1915 was one of the leaders of the church that was rounded up. And you got to remember, Gomidas was a priest of the Armenian church, so he wasn't hanging out in the cafes on Sunday morning. He wasn't going to soccer matches on Sunday morning. No, he was at the Holy Divine Liturgy at the Badarak. And this is something that escapes a lot of people when they talk about Gomidas. You know, he's a great man. Oh, yeah, let's hang out with him. No, he was a Father Gomidas who celebrated the Divine Liturgy. But it did take its toll. The entire genocide took its toll on him, where he lost his mind and really came down to what Father Zakaria related was a diagnosis of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which we heard more about like in the last several decades, in the last couple decades, particularly in reaction to the Iraqi war and military men coming back. Well, this was very much part of Gomidas's life too. And he ended up in an institutionalized, and he was put away in 1935. He died in an institution. And there's more details about his life, which you can do the research. But we were looking at the faith issues, and fascinating that he brought it down to this simple equation, that Gomidas was somebody who gave his heart to Christ, and in so doing, he picked up his cross. He did pick up his cross, and he followed Christ. And one of the questions that he got asked, and I think a lot of us have thought about through the years, is when you come across these people, these fascinating people, why aren't we seeing more of these people today? In other words, have there been Gomidases? Why aren't we seeing Gomidases being born today? That's a simple question, right? Like, is this just some phenomena that happened? Was he just a freak that all of a sudden came about? And his answer was also intriguing because it got me to think in a different direction. He said, yes, there are, but we're not giving those opportunities for these Gomidases, these young people who are being born, who are exploring themselves, exploring their talents. We're not giving them the opportunity to turn into these Gomidases. And it occurred to me that, yeah, you know, Gomidas was also a reaction to the time. Born in 1869, born in those circumstances, without any knowledge of the Armenian language. He goes to Etchmiadzin, he goes to the Armenian church, where he learns the language, he learns the faith. At age 13, he's already in the seminary. And you've got to remember, losing parents, being in that hostile environment, going from Kyutaya all the way to Etchmiadzin, and there in Etchmiadzin adopting a new family. And not only that, but what happens in Etchmiadzin, the Catholicos of the time, the leader of the time, he dies. So not only has he lost his parents, he has a double orphan situation, where he gets to Etchmiadzin and the leader of the church, the Catholicos, dies. And remember, Chirimian Haidik comes in as the patriarch of the all Armenians. And then there's certain issues that go there. So all of this was presented, and you realize that, you know, we are really a creation of our times. Our times dictate so much of who we are, what we are, and how we react to those times. This was a beautiful revelation. And the other one that was, I don't know why I didn't pick it. I mean, there was a booklet, and I did the entire translation to the English portion of that booklet. So it was all written in Armenian. And I translated a quote from Claude Debussy, famous musician, who had said, if Gumidas had written only Anduni, that would have been enough to consider him a prolific artist. So I translated that entire quote into English. I read it in Armenian and translated it to English. And I used the word exactly Anduni. In other words, if Gomidas had written only Anduni, not realizing Anduni, homeless, without home. And it just like, it really hit me like a ton of bricks, because so much of our ministry is reaching out to the homeless. And there it was, Gomidas Vartabed. This is over 100 years ago, writing a song about homelessness, about the homeless, and how we connected at that moment when I heard it. I mean, it was very, very, very moving. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to the video that we saw at the conference. This was a part of a presentation that was given, but I'll make sure that I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could see it as well. Make sure you watch it. It's beautiful. And there are many versions of it as well. So not only that, we had a chance to see all this, and Chadimian Heidi talk about him, about the illness that Gomidas went through. His last sermon that he was given, he started off okay, and then by the time he had finished it, he had already lost his faculties. He was out of it. It was just tragedy, but also opening up the door for us to really react to the story of Gomidas. So we heard these stories. Archbishop Hovnan Derderian gave this really intense little look at the divine liturgy. And I have to admit that, you know, this is the kind of stuff, and he said it too, you can't just do this in a 45-minute session. I mean, there were so many dimensions to it. But it got us thinking. It got us started. And I have to tell you, looking around the room, everybody, I cannot find anybody who was dissatisfied. I mean, there was just so much knowledge that was being presented to us. And at the end of it, we had a chance to go into the church where we heard the classics. Now, I have to tell you a little personal story that really, really hit me, because it happened to be my birthday on that day. And I had a tradition. I was born right at 3:30. I had a tradition that came upon me. My mom, in her later years, would call me right around 3:30, and she'd wish me a happy birthday. And this was the first year that mom hadn't called, or wasn't going to call, I should say it that way, right? I mean, we figured, we're not living in Twilight Zone. This is the first time that mom is not here. She's not going to be picking up a phone and calling me. And 3:30, we were in a session with Vache Mankurian. He was teaching about the music, the genius of Gomidas. And he made a small little comment, which really got to me, about the genius of Gomidas' music, that it connects us with our past. It connects us with our history, that it is truly, truly this art form that has the capability of connecting, of taking us beyond ourselves. And it was just beautiful for that moment. At 3:30, I was listening to Gomidas and was connected to my mom. I was connected to the ancestry that came before me. So in a personal level, it was very fulfilling. It was spiritually uplifting. And it was a wonderful, wonderful concert and conference. I believe tomorrow, the news article, there's a journalist named Talin Babayan, who was covering it. I think her story will come out tomorrow. Probably too late to include in our show notes today, but do check it out. I gave you the name, Talin Babayan. It'll be a story about the Reclaim 2019. And if it doesn't get out in time for this one, definitely next week's show notes. With all that goodness, let me tell you one of the big issues for me. And it kind of like went over into the next day, and I think many of you who are listening the group that we consider as the disenfranchised, the group that's looking for language. I think that language became a critical issue that I had not looked at it in this way until this conference. In other words, I realized that the language issue was not about just translating. So many times what we do at events, conferences, and at sermons, what we do is we go out there and we'll give the sermon in one language and then we'll translate. That's not doing a service to anybody, because there are people that have to, sometimes horribly, have to go through the same thing, because if it's not good the first time, trust me, it's not going to be good in a translated form, definitely in a translated form. So many people have to suffer through this. And I realized at this conference that you just cannot do it that way. We have to come up with new systems. And it's something that I need to address, and I need to talk to our bishops. In other words, it's something that we cannot just say that, okay, a translation is one for the other. But we have to simultaneously run events and activities that make use of one singular language. It's just the way the times are. And I'll tell you what happened. It was not only at the Gomidas conference that I felt this, but it was the following day. And I'm going to just throw this out at you, and it's a personal reflection. If you don't want to hear it, you can definitely fast forward towards the end of today's show, and I'll tell you about what we're doing right now. But this is a personal reflection about language issues. On Sunday, we went to an event sponsored by Forest Lawn. It is one of the largest cemetery mortuaries in Southern California. And of course, being in the heart of Southern California, especially in the Glendale, Burbank, Hollywood area, of course, it caters to many, many, many Armenians. And on any given weekend, you can just walk in there and see. I mean, you're talking about acres and acres and acres of cemetery plots. You could see Armenians just about on every corner, in every direction. There's so many Armenians that the Forest Lawn needs to serve this community by having various programs. And sure enough, this week happened to be the anniversary of that four-day war. Do you remember back in 2016 in Artsakh, there was a four-day war. It claimed the lives of over 100 Armenian young men. And we were together that day on Sunday in church, where we spoke about it. There was Requiem. And right after church, we went to Forest Lawn, where they were going to show this movie. They were going to show a documentary that was prepared by a documentary author who is Bulgarian by nationality. She prepared it in the Russian language, and by Russian standards, it was fine. And the speakers were Armenian, the people she interviewed. So you had this double language, Russian and Armenian, and there was English subtitles. And then the grave mistake was made. The mistake that we see over and over and over again. There we were, giant, giant assembly hall, huge opportunities, non-Armenians, showing basically Forest Lawn, showing this movie about injustice, about atrocities against Armenians. It's contemporary. It's about today. It's talking about justice, freedom, self-determination, all the things that we want people to know about. And guess what? They sat down and started talking in Armenian. I gotta tell you something. My birthday was the day before this, and I just started thinking to myself, you know, I've spent the last 6 decades listening to this stuff during April, and we haven't evolved, have we? There we were sitting there, and we were telling ourselves our own story. An opportunity to tell the world, but no, we had to hear it ourselves. Talk in Armenian. It's important. Very important. Why? This story, everybody knows. Every Armenian and his brother and his mother know this story. This story needs to be told outside of Armenian circles. But there we were. Preaching to the choir, is it called? Preaching to ourselves. And it was tragic. And I think that that language issue has to be solved immediately, not only in churches, but it has to be solved all the way in the community. We talk about, here in America, we talk about American Armenians, the Armenians who were born in America. And this usually is about, and in fact, just this morning, there was a, let me see if I could pull that up. There was an interesting article that one of our listeners sent to me. Here it is. Let's see. An interesting article that appeared in Armenian Weekly. And it's called Calling All Baby Boomer Armenians, talking about the experience of growing up in America with the church, Armenian in the church. And I read this and I related to it so well. And this was the American Armenian, the Armenian American, right? Well, guess who the Armenian American is today? It's not third, fourth generation. It's first generation. It's people that have come here. There's no other place you're going after this. And as you're sitting here, guess what? Your kids are not learning Armenian. They are speaking English. And whatever they are speaking in the house is not what they are speaking in the streets and to each other. The great, great equalizer. And so we need to find the common language, the language that's going to be speaking all the way across. And we have the answer. We've been doing it. It's in our church. And this is what we've been talking about here on The Next Step. It's not about, you know, promoting Armenianism. It's giving the message of Christ. When you see the message of Christ, when you hear the message of Christ, you understand that you are created in God's image, that you are a creation of God. You understand that these beautiful talents, the uniqueness that you have, is something to be celebrated. And you celebrate that uniqueness, not in some kind of phony pride, hey, look at me, look what I got, but as a person of humanity, understanding that your past is not something that is in a textbook or in a museum, but your past is defining who you are today, and of course, opening the doors for tomorrow. And we need to start expressing ourselves in this respect. That's what we do here on The Next Step. That's what Armadoxy is all about. It's Christianity without the hoopla. That's what this entire Lenten season has been about. About tapping in to what God has created us to be. The talents, taking hold of those talents. And in that respect, this Gomidas concert that we had this last weekend was just a beautiful display of those talents. So there you have it, a little bit rundown of what happened over the weekend and also an opportunity for us to refocus and rededicate ourselves. You know, Holy Week is coming, the most important week, not only in the Armenian Orthodox Church, but entire Christendom. And this is just a great time to focus in on what's important. Having been through the Lenten season and gone through the Lenten journey, now you're ready. You're ready to open the doors to Holy Week and see all that God has in store for you. Let's take a break right now. Here's Susan to make her announcement, and I'll be back in a couple moments.
Here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams. using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, and thank you, our listeners, for your encouraging words, your thoughts, your prayers, and your support. They go a long way. They make this podcast possible. So thank you very much. I do read everything you do send me, and I love it all, I have to tell you. And thank you very much for your kind wishes as well. Well, by the time you listen to this, we are at the end of Lent. Lent ends officially this Saturday with Lazarus Saturday, and then begins, of course, Holy Week with Palm Sunday. Actually, Lazarus Saturday starts it, but let's go with the Palm Sunday, the more traditional expression, right? How we start off. Over the past Lenten season, I've done a series of lectures, of homilies at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral. And I just finished the last one last night. Archbishop Hovnan asked me to put those together. And so hopefully very soon these will be put together in a book form, both in Armenian and in English. They were delivered in Armenian, so we're going to be translating those to English. And I have to tell you, it was really one of those series that I wanted to do. I really very much appreciated the opportunity. We spoke about the Christian ministry that we go through, and specifically we spoke about the Susnashen Project. We spoke about the Indian Orthodox. We spoke about the Starkey, the hearing aids. We spoke about the donkeys for Darfur, and about how taking these small steps, they leave huge footprints. And everything I just said is something that you as our listeners, you as Next Steppers, you as part of the In Issues ministry know very well. And so it was a beautiful opportunity to be able to share this with others beyond our listenership over here. And that's all possible through your prayers, because I really believe it's those prayers that push us in these directions. So I can't thank you enough. And please continue to pray for us, even when you hear those little, what was that? Oh, okay. Never mind. Even when you hear those little jingles that come up over there, still, please continue to pray for us. We need those prayers, and they really give us the strength. Listen, we got Holy Week coming up. It is a beautiful time. I ended my series of lectures with this thought, and this is what I want to share with you as well. There is a very, very ancient saying, and I believe the author goes back to its Chinese saying, but I'm sure there's a lot of people who have come up with the similar idea. It's basically, it is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Today's program, we started off with that absolute cursed darkness, the dark hole. And we saw that within it, there's an opportunity for our imaginations to really go wild. That opportunity is kindled by that little flame that you light. Go ahead and light it. It's Holy Week. Make it a time where you grow. Make it a time where you react, where you take all that God has given you and you light not only yourself, but all that you touch, all the people that you touch, the world that you touch with that light. Because the author of that light is the same author of our souls and our life. Basically, Christ is in our midst. That's what we celebrate this Holy Week. And as much as you pray for me, know that I'm praying for you as we get through this most, most beautiful time in the life of the church. I am trying to put together something very special, and if it all goes well, I should have it for you by next week. But I don't want to make a promise. If it's not next week, it might be a post-Easter show. But there is a very special picture that was drawn for me by a friend in high school, a friend that I don't even remember, but I do know that this picture has been with me all along, and it has inspired me to think of Jesus in certain terms. It is a portrait that a friend made of Jesus. I don't know what it's based on, but it is certainly something that has been a very important part of my life and my understanding of who Christ is. I thought that that would be my gift to you during Holy Week. If all goes well, pray for me. I'm hoping that that's what next week's show will be. It'll be this very special Jesus that will be a descriptor that will be presented to you here on The Next Step. Like I said, if it doesn't happen, you'll get it, because it's been gnawing at me and it's something that I want to do. Do pray for us. And like I said, I promise you're in our prayers. Listen, I want to thank you for joining us today. Hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. You can follow us on all the usual spaces and in social media. You can also find us at inissues.org. I want to thank you, and on behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
One top minutes.